Okay. In Isaiah 33:22.
For the Lord is our judge. The Lord is our lawgiver. The Lord is our king. He will save us.
Well, that's who the lawgiver is, isn't it?
Yes.
It's the Lord.
That's right.
So if we go back here to Genesis 49:10, the scepter shall not depart from Judah. That's speaking about Jesus Christ. Nor a lawgiver from between his feet. That's speaking about the Lord. Until Shiloh come. That's speaking about the return of Jesus Christ. And unto him shall the gathering of the people be. Well, that's the gathering together of the multitude.
He will gather his elect from the four winds.
Yeah. Exactly. So this is all of this stuff is starting to really fit in together. Now let's take a look here at Jeremiah 31:6. Because somehow the multitude ends up coming to the Lord, don't they?
Yes.
Well, here we can see how they start coming to the Lord.
For there shall be a day that the watchman upon the Mount Ephraim shall cry, Arise ye, and let us go to Zion unto the Lord our God.
They're going to cry and saying, Come on, guys, let's go. Let's go to Zion. Let's get out of here. Let's get out of Babylon. Let's get out of Assyria. Let's get out of Egypt. Let's go to Zion. Because that's where the Lord is. Remember, the house of the Lord is going to be established in the top of the mountains,
yes.
And it's going to be called Zion.
That's right.
That's where the 144,000 are. Go ahead and do a word search on Zion. Then this is your homework study for tonight. Go look through there and look at all the verses pertaining to Zion. And it starts, it will tell you, they shall turn their faces thitherward towards Zion. They're going to seek Zion. They're going to seek the mountain of the house of the Lord. And this is where it is. It's in Zion. Well, the 144,000 are standing upon Mount Sion with the Lord, aren't they, in Revelation chapter 14?
Yeah.
Because that's where the truth is. That's where the lawgiver is. And they're going to be coming to the stick of Ephraim, I keep calling it the stick of Ephraim. It's the stick of Joseph with Ephraim's name on it. It's going to be joining itself to Judah. Well, that's Jesus Christ. And as an extension of Jesus Christ, the 144,000.
Yeah. Interesting here, too, because it says the watchman upon Mount Ephraim.
Yes.
You know, there's kind of a little hint here, if you want to get a little more prophetic, that there's a few who are going to wake up. There are a few in Sardis who have not soiled their robes. There's a few who actually do have eyes to see, even in the rapture cult right now, even in the churches. And these are going to be the ones that wake up. They're going to go, wow, look at this. What's going on? We want to know. And, you know, we've said many times, the mission of 144,000 is going to be to teach those in the multitude. See, this gives you a little picture here of that.
Yes, it does, and this is kind of interesting, too, here, where it talks about the watchmen, because there's going to be leaders among the multitude also.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Now, if we spoke about the five barley loaves and the two small fishes, remember the people out there that were getting fed are the multitude. Well, how can the two small fishes, being the multitude, feed the multitude? Well, that's exactly what they do. There's going to be those of us, you know, look at the 144,000 right now. They're teaching the 144,000. The multitude is going to be also teaching the multitude. You know, the truth is going to be coming from the 144,000, but the multitude is going to pick that up, and they're going to say, hey,
yeah.
Did you hear what I got to tell you this. I got to tell you this.
Yeah.
They're going to be carrying the word. They're going to be carrying the word through the prisons when they're all captured. They're going to be, you know, upholding each other. I mean, these verses, you know, you look in the New Testament about exhorting one another. Even more so as you see the day approaching. You know, when you start seeing all these things, you start understanding that the 144,000 are going to be teaching, and the multitude, once they learn the truth, are going to be teaching their fellows, the ones that are in the same boat as they are. And so this is, you know, it talks about the watchman upon Mount Ephraim. That's telling us right there there's going to be people that are going to be shouting this out, saying, come on, let's go to Zion. Let's go to the house of the Lord. Let's go to the truth. And in Jeremiah 31:9,
they shall come with weeping, and with supplications will I lead them. I will cause them to walk by the rivers of waters in a straight way, wherein they shall not stumble. For I am a father to Israel, and Ephraim is my firstborn. Wow, he just got his birthright back, didn't he?
He did. Yes, he did. And they're going to come with weeping. Oh, yeah, they're going to come with weeping. And they're going to be coming with supplications. But the Lord is going to lead them. Look at that. It says, will I lead them? And I will cause them to walk by the rivers of water in a straight way. Now, remember, the multitude, they're getting fed wormwood and gall, aren't they?
Yeah, exactly.
And many men are dying because of the bitter waters. But the Lord is going to cause them to walk by the rivers of water in a straight way. This is the river of living waters.
That's right.
This is the truth.
You can actually,
and they're not going to stumble.
Yeah, you can actually go over and read Psalm 23 with a little more understanding on. That's a psalm that's been cliched to death, but it's a psalm I love. Go read Psalm 23 in the context of Jeremiah 31:9.
Yes. For I am a father to Israel, and Ephraim is my firstborn. He just got brought back into, you know, the Lord just accepted him.
Yeah.
Now Jeremiah 31:20. This is the very next verse after that.
Is Ephraim my dear son? Is he a pleasant child? For since I spake against him, I do earnestly remember him still. Therefore my bowels are troubled for him. I will surely have mercy upon him, saith the Lord. Now just put in here the word bowels. You can think of that as heart.
Yes, the inner part.
The inner part, yeah.
Yes. And do you see what it says here? Ephraim, my dear son, is he a pleasant child? For since I spake against him, well, there's the chastisement, mm-hmm. there's the punishment that they've gone through. And it says, I do earnestly remember him still. And he says that I shall have mercy upon him. And we can find this here in Leviticus 26:43-45. And if you read prior to this, these are the, you know, and I shall punish him seven times more for his sin. It goes through a whole chapter here. But we're going to pick it up here in verses 40 and go through 45. Because this is at the point where the multitude has been chastised. They've been beaten down. They finally realize the truth. They finally realize where they have been. That they've been eating unclean things in Assyria, that they've been in Egypt, they've been in Babylon, and they've been right with them. But they've now parted from them, and now they're coming to the Lord. And so we're going to pick it up here in verse 40, and this is what happens.
If they shall confess their iniquity, and the iniquity of their fathers, with their trespass which they have trespassed against me, and that also they have walked contrary unto me, and that I also have walked contrary unto them, and have brought them into the land of their enemies. If then their uncircumcised hearts be humbled, and they then accept the punishment of their iniquity, then I will remember my covenant with Jacob, and also my covenant with Isaac, and also my covenant with Abraham will I remember. And I will remember the land. The land also shall be left of them, and shall enjoy her Sabbaths, while she lieth desolate without them. And they shall accept the punishment of their iniquity, because they despised my judgments, and because their soul abhorred my statutes. And yet for all that, when they be in the land of their enemies, I will not cast them away, neither will I abhor them to destroy them utterly, and to break my covenant with them, for I am the Lord their God. But I will be for their sakes. Remember the covenant of their ancestors, whom I brought forth out of the land of Egypt in the sight of the heathen, that I might be their God. I am the Lord.
Wow. That right there, in a nutshell, is what happens to the multitude when
indeed,
they confess their iniquity. He brings them back in. And he does it with loving arms when they accept the punishment of their iniquity. What is the punishment of their iniquity? It's going to be their physical death.
That's right.
And he talks about that the land shall enjoy her Sabbaths. because they're not going back to the land. They're never going to return to the land. The land is going to be desolate. The abomination that maketh desolate.
Exactly, yeah.
That is why the land is desolate. Every single one of them are killed.
And notice something in Leviticus 23 here. For anybody who happens to think that we negate the grace of God by teaching that the multitude are killed, these are stipulations in Leviticus 26:40. You'll notice it says, if they confess their iniquity and the iniquity of their fathers, if you confess that you have walked in wrong teaching in the church and that you have been taught bad things through the traditions of men, if their uncircumcised hearts be humbled. These are called stipulations. It's a legal term. A stipulation is a high form of law. It says, if this, then that. It's a cause of logic. And so, it is not works. God has very clearly said, my grace has these conditions on it. You've transgressed against me, and now I have to raise the price, so to speak.
Yeah, and they then accept the punishment of their iniquity. They're literally going to accept it.
That's a very important part of this whole thing. There's an acceptance of punishment of their iniquity. Why? Because they refused the truth. They didn't walk in the truth. And they basically denied Jesus Christ even while professing his name by not being in the truth.
Yes, and you see this, you know, when we're talking about, you know, works and grace and all that, there is grace with Jesus Christ, but you need to understand the law. The Lord has rules that he cannot violate. They cannot be violated. And what has happened is the multitude has put themselves under the law. This was the basis for the entire plumb line study.
Yeah.
When you're walking in the truth of Jesus Christ, as one of the 144,000. When you're walking in that truth, you're taking the lies, you're throwing them away. You are no longer under the law because you are covered by Jesus Christ.
Exactly, yeah. And to those out there who have attempted to say, well, there can't be any punishment because God's all grace. No, no, the multitude are all covered. Nothing's going to happen to them. Well, that's the voice of a false prophet. Because
exactly.
Leviticus 26, which we just read, it definitely states that when they accept the punishment of their iniquity, then grace comes back into force. All these things happened as examples for us upon whom the ends of the age have come. Leviticus 26 did not get washed out at the time of the cross.
No, it did not, because the multitude, when they were walking in the lies, they literally put themselves under the law. They no longer accepted the grace of Jesus Christ. And when the third overturning comes about, the tribulation, it's the cutoff point. It's the cutoff point where he says, I shall not pass by them anymore. This is it. And wherever they were at that point, that's why you have the four winds. They are basically the judicial aspect of the punishment, of the segregation of the different groups that are in the tribulation. And then when they accept the punishment of their iniquity, well, what's the punishment of iniquity? It's death. All sin leads to death. The punishment for sin is death. They accept the punishment of their iniquity, which is death, and through his grace, he gives them life. That's the grace of Jesus Christ. It had, works has nothing to do with it. There are certain boundaries that the Lord cannot go over. There are certain rules that he has that he cannot violate, and this is one of them. Because if he would accept them without them accepting the punishment of their iniquity, then he would be violating his own laws.
That's right.
God cannot do that.
Yeah, he cannot do that. He will not do that. Yeah.
No, he will not do that. But there is, what I find so interesting in this verse right here, then will I remember my covenant with Jacob, and also my covenant with Isaac, and also my covenant with Abraham will I remember, and I will remember the land. And he remembers that covenant. It's almost like this almost gives you the indication here that while all this is happening and they finally confess of their iniquity, it's almost to that point they're divorced, aren't they?
Yeah,
the
exactly.
Covenant is not there. It's when they accept, when they confess their iniquity, when they accept the punishment for their iniquity, then the Lord remembers the covenant. And where is what's under the covenant? If you will walk in my ways, there shall be grace.
Yeah.
And so right here is where it changes. So it has nothing to do with works. It has them for being under the law, and he's giving them a release under the law, but they have to fulfill the punishment of the law, which is death.
And all of the covenants are one covenant. There isn't really, for the sake of the study that we're doing, there's no old covenant and new covenant.
No.
The book of Galatians tells us that Jesus Christ confirmed the covenant. The covenant, singular. There's
yes,
only one,
it's one
covenant.
Covenant.
It's simply continued through the salvational work of God from the time that he brought the children of Israel out of Egypt forward to the time of the cross. It was a continuous covenant which was broken consistently by Israel and thus causing God to void it himself. Basically, God's pulled the file here. He's going to renew the contract now because the stipulations have been fulfilled. And it's something to bear in mind when you encounter people who try to segregate Scripture into two different covenants and say, well, the Jews are saved under the old covenant and we're new covenant. No, there's one covenant. There's the covenant between God and man. Christ confirmed the covenant and he came to fulfill the law.
Oh, and that's kind of interesting too, because if Jesus Christ confirmed the covenant, which he did, and that covenant they are ignoring because they don't follow Jesus Christ.
That's right.
That means they don't have a covenant, do they?
No, they don't. They don't have covering. That's exactly what this is all about. That's what we talked about earlier.
Yes.
Yeah.
The covenant is the grace of Jesus Christ. It comes through Jesus Christ. He's the one that did the reconciling.
Yeah.
He is the mediator between man and God. And so you have to go through Jesus Christ. So, you know, this whole thing, you know, they are so far off in giving the heritage to the physical Jew because they don't have any understanding of Scripture.
That's exactly.
None whatsoever.
Yeah, exactly.
They are following another God because it's not the one that we know.
No, it's not.
No. Okay, and at this point, we have pretty much concluded the study on Ephraim and Manasseh and how they get brought back into the 12 tribes. And how these are the two sons, just kind of bringing it back to actually where we started. In the two witnesses, it talks about the two witnesses in Revelation chapter 9, that these are the two olive trees that stand before the Lord. And then that took us into Zechariah chapter 4, where it talks about these two olive trees emptying the oil out of themselves into the seven golden candlesticks. And we can see now how Ephraim, let me kind of digress here a little bit, where the two olive trees, we take it further down, and it tells us that these are two branches. Oh, we're back to the branches now,
yeah,
aren't we?
Exactly, yeah.
And they are the two sons, you know, when you actually look into the definitions. And the two sons brought us to Ephraim and Manasseh, that being them being the sons of Joseph. And they were born in Egypt. And then these two sons, the firstborn and the secondborn, firstborn Manasseh, secondborn Ephraim. When the blessing comes down upon them, Ephraim switches and makes Ephraim the firstborn and Manasseh the second. And then when he tells us that they shall be as Reuben and Simeon, my firstborn. Well, this is when he actually takes his two grandsons and adopts them as his own sons, brings them into the 14 tribe or the 12 tribes, and that makes it 14. And then we looked at the names of Reuben and Simeon. They shall be as Reuben and Simeon. And Reuben and Simeon came out to eyes to see and ears to hear,
mm-hmm.
didn't it?
Exactly, yeah.
And that's exactly what happens to the multitude when they wake up. They have eyes to see and they have ears to hear. And then when we went through the, you know, the whole tribes and how Ephraim and Manasseh, the half-tribe of Manasseh, we discussed about that earlier, how they fought against Judah. And then in the end, they come back to Judah and they are made into one stick. And they are brought back into the 12 tribes. And that's how the multitude ends up coming into the 12 tribes, because right now they're pushed out. They're not following the laws of God. And like I've stated in the past, there are mechanics because they're not following it. They are pushed out. And then this is how the Lord brings them back in Leviticus 26, what we had just covered. And so that kind of gives you, in a nutshell, the whole process. And so we've just made a complete circle coming back, and now we're going to go back into Revelation chapter 9 and start taking a look at the two witnesses verse by verse. But we had to show you who the two witnesses actually are. No, they're not Elijah. They're not Zerubbabel. They're not John. Yeah, they're not Zerubbabel, John. They are the tribes of Ephraim and the half-tribe of Manasseh that the Lord is bringing back in into the one fold. And so let's go ahead and just take a quick look here. I know we don't have that much time to really get into it. But let's go ahead and look here at Revelation 9:3.
And I will give power unto my two witnesses, and they shall prophesy 1,260 days. Clothed in sackcloth.
He gives them, let's just briefly talk about this two witnesses. They are given power as the two witnesses to prophesy 1,260 days. And I will just note that word power is actually added in there. It actually states, and I will give unto my two witnesses. And we'll cover more of that in the next show. But it tells us here, 1,260 days.
Yeah,
that's 1,260 days, 3.5 years. They're going to be prophesying, clothed in sackcloth. And go ahead over the course of the next day, go ahead and pull out Revelation 9:3 and just start kind of reading some of these verses. Get yourself familiar with them.
Yeah,
and
the other thing is, wrap your mind around the idea that what you consider a prophecy entails many different things. The prophecy of the two witnesses here is the testimony that they are giving prophetically. It is an act, it is the deeds, it is the things that are going to go on in the tribulation. And when we come back on the next show, we're going to pick up with the two witnesses and we'll start to delve into more details about what really goes on with the two witnesses. This has been The Threshing Floor with Randy Moggins
and Sue Patterson.
Until the next time we meet, may the Lord bless the remnant of Israel.
And may He have mercy upon the multitude. Good night.
Leaving the threshing floor. This is the place where the wheat is separated from the chaff. The gathering of the Lord's harvest will continue when you return next time to the threshing floor.